T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
He said right there, you're looking at a guy in Justin Fields.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
Mully and Hall, live and local, Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Last year, as Ryan Day and myself were having some discussions about other players, other former Buckeye players for last year's draft, at the end of it came up to discussion. I just asked him about his quarterback, and that's when he mentioned to me, he said this kid is a generational talent, and that struck me. That stayed with me. And so I brought that back to Ryan last year, and we started, really watching all these guys. And over time now, once you get after the season, you start watching all these different quarterbacks and you start hearing where they could go, might go, may go. And you have to go ahead and decide, okay, what's best for us, if it's possible, player strengths, player weaknesses, and then where we sit as well with the draft.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's Matt Nagy, and he was on 97.1 The Fan in Columbus, Ohio. He's doing a lot of out-of-town stuff and a lot of national stuff. I think he's on Ross Tucker's podcast. Keep an eye out for that. And David is off today, and we have the great Tom Thayer with us, and we are honored, Tom, that you share our airwaves. And we want to take advantage of your presence and talk a little bit about the draft, and I know we've gone over it privately, but we did it on the air.
Yep.
But I'm curious to get your take on what Matt Nagy, obviously, that he thinks is a generational talent, or he's been told that by Ryan Day, and he came back and he told it to Ryan Pace, and then they watched the kid maybe a little closer. I think he is an unbelievable athlete. Is he a generational talent? How long does it take to know that?
Well, the thing about all of them, let's keep Lance kind of out of the mix, quarterback that went to San Francisco, because it's a little bit different with the style and the limited amount of experience he has and the division he played in and stuff, because he's probably the best athlete on the field amongst everybody. But when you look at Lawrence that went one, and you look at Wilson that went two, and you look at Mac that went to New England, when you're investigating these players, you have to look at the defensive fronts they're playing against at their last college season. And they're not going to face 8 and 9 man fronts because these guys are considered generational talent. And so they have to have defensive coverages set up to challenge these guys in their window of opportunities when they're throwing. In order to get over that hump when they get into the NFL, how do they filter 8 and 9 man fronts? Because these guys are going to see a steady diet of 8 and 9 man fronts. There's going to be an unblocked rusher at them because they're going to challenge their abilities. They're going to challenge the way they filter the information that they're learning at such a rapid rate that some of these guys are still spinning a year or a year and a half into their career. So now, does Trevor Lawrence have escapability? Does Wilson have really? See, he's my least favorable one out of all the quarterbacks that they've evaluated and they put into this high profile position. You know, he had Mac out of BYU. He had a group of 24, 25-year-old offensive linemen that are mature and they're playing in the, and that BYU offense is really a well-run system. But to me, it's going to be that how do they filter the defensive fronts that they're going to face for the first time in probably 3 years in their career. And, yeah, if they can outthink their opponent and the coaches put them in the best position possible and the running backs and the tight ends are able to accept blocking responsibilities to protect these quarterbacks, then you're going to see their time, they're going to grow and they're going to develop. When you talk about a generational talent, Justin Fields, he has the escapability. He has the ability to run away from a defender. If you go back and you watch the early games of Wilson out in Seattle, sometimes his escapability was his best asset to make the biggest plays early in his career. He would create fatigue on the defense that these guys didn't, they couldn't chase him down. I remember Peppers and from the Bears, Peppers and Brian Urlacher being so fatigued trying to chase him in the fourth quarter, even though they were ineffective. Julius Peppers, sorry. So I do like the athlete that the Bears are being offered in Justin Fields, but it's going to be about how quickly he picks up on all the information that they're going to feed him. And that's going to be an evaluation that you're going to be able to take from the meeting room to the practice field. Because if I'm going to sit here and teach Mike Mulligan the offense of the Bears and I'm going to ask you questions and I needed you to answer them in an instant, I can't have you sitting here thinking and looking up at the sky and kind of wondering and being, boom, you're sacked. And so they're going to have to go through a strict evaluation period of seeing how they're absorbing this information. Where do they know their blockers are set up? Where are they susceptible to having pressure presented to them early in their career? So they're all on the same path. Lawrence down in Jacksonville, yeah, he's what's they're calling him a once-in-a-lifetime type of talent.
Right, he's Peyton Manning.
Look what happened to Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow threw the ball so much, he threw it until he got hurt. And you don't want to put these guys in that same position. So to me, it's all about how they filter information against some aggressive defensive fronts that they're going to face. And when you go back and you watch the Super Bowl last year and you see what Todd Bowles did against who was considered one of the best quarterbacks in the league right now, he put him on retreat. You know, and in a retreat position after the snap. So you're going to see a lot of these defensive coordinators are going to take that same blueprint of that game plan from the Super Bowl, and they're going to implement it in what they're going to teach their defense this year of those guys that are playing those defensive schemes, which a lot of the teams are right now. So, you know, it's going to be a really drastic learning curve for all of them to get out and provide for them for the reason they drafted them.
When you look at where this team is at and with the offensive line where it is at, there is a huge question mark at left tackle.
Yep.
And it's just because the guy hasn't played it at the NFL level. He's barely played at the college level. The Bears see the ability there. Otherwise, they wouldn't have just, you know, I mean, I thought that Charles Leno Jr., that was purely a salary cap cut. I didn't think it really had anything to do. I mean, he's not great, but he was solid, and I was surprised that they – I thought – I kind of saw it coming because of the cap, but I'm surprised they don't have anyone with any NFL experience that has played even a down at left tackle. That just surprised me, and I thought they would try to sign someone or they would get like a blocking tight end type that you could use to help out a little, but they've not done that. So – when we look at where they're at, how when do you know if a guy can play or not? When do you know? And left tackle is obviously a very hard position to play. I'd be curious to know, Tom, just from your career, when do you know if a guy can line up there? When do you know if a guy can play? You saw Jimbo Covert get hurt, and then, you know, there was a problem with the Bears. What about the quarterback position? When do you know that a guy can play? You've seen different guys that came right in and different guys that had to develop. How long does it take, and how do you know when a guy's ready?
Well, you know,
as a player,
Bill Lazor, John DeFilippo, Matt Nagy, when they're sitting in the meeting room with Justin Fields and they're presenting him up on the board and they're saying, all right, now, Justin, you go on the board. We're going to give you a play, and we want you to tell us every single route against every single coverage and how – that where would you go with the ball? And the way they respond to it, like I said, if they do it quickly and they have a good understanding of it, then you know that's going to transfer out into the field. If they're hesitant about the way they answer questions, you know that they're fighting for the information that you've packed their head with, and they're just not in that rhythm, into that time. So when I was in college, my senior year in college, we played Pitt, and I paid attention to Jimbo the whole game. I went to the All-Star game, the Hula Bowl, and Jimbo was our left tackle. Here's a guy that I knew, he's a day one starter. This dude is a left tackle for his career. He's not going to switch to the right-hand side because he's not an experiment. He's a bona fide left tackle, and he's a day one starter. And you can see it in every way, shape, or form. He's strong, he's thick, he's big, he's determined. He knows football. He had a great college coach in Joe Moore.
Feet.
Yeah. And that was my next point. So when you get out and you take Tevin Jenkins out to the rookie mini camp and you all watch his balance, watch his feet, watch how quickly he gets out of his stance. What position is he in when he gets out of his stance? Where is his base? Because the thing about it is when you're an offensive lineman, you have to be able to retreat and be able to punch forward. So you can't lose your balance while you're punching forward and bring right. all your body and your balance. You got to be able to stay in an organized balance position, and you're going to be able to see it. Can he develop it? Yes. Will it take time? Heck yeah, because he's going to be going against some of the guys at this level that he's never seen before and in college. But when I go back and I watch the tape of him at left tackle and he's going to be able to play the run. He's got a great aggressive mental attitude towards playing the run. And like you talked about, put a tight end next to him, put an H-back, have him protected with a fullback or a running back over there. And all those types of little things that he'll be able to do immediately. I really feel confident about that. But when you put him in that one-on-one opportunity where he has no help and he knows it and he's on an island over there, is he up to the inside out, you know, the outside yep. inside move? Yep. Is he able to transfer his balance and his weight? Is he able to play with his head up, be aggressive, but have that little passive stance you have to have as an offensive lineman? So there's a lot of things that you're going to be able to determine early if he has the ability to play that position that's developable, if that's a word, during the course of practices in the season. And so that evidence will come early. So these guys get drafted. They get their tablets. They have a chance to go out there and study. So they have to show me that you're a little bit pre-prepared before you get into these meetings by yourself study. And that also tells me a little bit about how willing are you to go to that next level that we need you right now to put in a little bit of your personal invested time to get ready to play?
And what about, is it different? You know, obviously you recognize athletic factors, but is it different with the quarterback because of the leadership necessity? And that's one of the things that people talked about with Justin Fields is that maybe he's a little deeper of a thinker. Maybe he's not this extrovert personality. Maybe he's not yelling in the huddle. He's soft-spoken, whatever it might be. You hear things like that. Does it, you know, there are so many different ways to play the position and so many different personalities of the people we've seen. But is there an element of that that you have to develop?
Yeah, you know, you're not going to be a quarterback that's going to be a yeller in the huddle unless you're yelling encouragement. Like we see highlights of Brady doing it all the time. You're not going to come in here and start yelling at players because they're, you know, maybe as you gain a little bit of cred out there, then you can start encouraging players to do things more correctly or be in a position where I expect you to be in. If I know there's pressure coming and I'm vulnerable, making sure the guy is fulfilling his responsibility to protect me by you getting in the right position. I think Justin Fields is going to have all those abilities because he's played in a huge program. He's played in front of 100,000 people right, in the course of right. his career. He's been able to have the confidence to transfer from one conference into another conference that has puts equal importance on their program. So all the little things about Justin, that evaluation is done. Now it's going to be about how the information is filtered through his head and how efficiently he can use his talents to, provide what all the other assets on the field are supposed to do for him.
I think it was Harbaugh. There was a story in practice where he threw a pass that hung Dennis McKinnon out to dry, and Dennis McKinnon got cleaned out. And then he came back to the huddle and punched him mm-hmm. or slapped him or something.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a couple of times. There have been Harbaugh Moses Marino, a quarterback, tried to come in, and I think it might have been even Olin that he tried to give a little sass to. Wasn't having it. It ended right there. Yeah, I saw Jim. I've been in the huddle with him when it's either a bad facial expression or just maybe even, doing the wrong thing according to the play called and, having to be corrected in the huddle. And when Jim first started playing, he didn't have the listening device in his helmet, so he was doing everything through memorization, and that was a huge hindrance to his development. And when they put the listening devices in the helmet, that's when Jim's career started to take off. And so now these guys, Justin Fields is going to have that communication ability in his helmet, which is extremely helpful to these young quarterbacks that are learning, because they can call a play and they can say, hey, watch how the free safety moves here. If he starts shrinking over towards the hash, your right side's going to be open. Boom. So now you got those types of hints and clues every single play.
Yeah, when did they shut off the microphone? They shut it off like five or 10 seconds before.
Yeah, maybe even 20 seconds or something before the play.
So there was a story about Sean McVay with Jared Goff that they would try to run the play in the first 20 seconds so McVay could see it and talk the quarterback through it. So they were always going kind of quick in the count, because they didn't want him to try to decide anything. They wanted the voice in his head. It was McVay and what he was seeing that he wanted the kid to translate, and that's it. So they would go earlier. They would never snap the ball at the end of the clock. They would try to get it early in order to have the quarterback seeing what the defense is running.
Well, there's
the coach.
There's different ways that you can do that responsibly. If you're trying to take advantage of the personnel that's on the field, where you don't bring in any extra personnel, then the defense doesn't make changes.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden you're running at such a rapid rate. The defense's head is spinning as much as you're trying to get the offense in position to run the next play. So there's different strategies that coaches can use now when they have that listening device in the helmet. But some quarterbacks need a little bit more time to filter the information, and they can't – they're not on the sideline. They're waiting to take the center quarterback exchange and run the play.
When we talk about quarterbacks playing quickly – how many guys do you remember that played quickly in your tenure?
Oh, man. I mean, when I was drafted, when Marino played immediately.
Oh, he was different level, right?
Yeah.
It was the release more than anything else.
Right. That the quarterback time of the Elways and stuff. But, to me, I have more – I'm kind of more old school. I'm like, take time and development.
Yeah.
I was okay if – Trubisky sat around for a couple of years. You see what it did for Aaron Rodgers. You see what really the real career of Steve Young, how much of a failure he was at the beginning and how successful he was at the end. So, there's nowadays you have the pressure that you have to play early. Before, in the olden days when you weren't making that type of salary, then you could sit around for a year and the team could absorb whatever they were paying you for that first year and try to get you ready into your second and third seasons.
When we talk about quarterback development, unfortunately we've not seen it here in Chicago. There are a lot of things that go into it, and we've seen first round picks come in and kind of fail and not play very well. Now, some of them may have just been bad picks, Cade McNown, but there are other guys that you think might have been something or might have been able to do something, but they just were in the wrong place at the wrong time. And guys can get ruined pretty quickly,
right?
Unfortunately. And I think that that's an important element. But the difference, like to me, the question is, do you owe it to the rest of the team to play a veteran quarterback and know that you can win with a veteran quarterback? Or do you owe it to the rest of the team to play the best athlete or the best quarterback. I don't know who the best quarterback is. They've got to have some practices and everything else. But if this kid can do some of the things that he's done in college and you can translate that enough, do you owe it to the rest of the team? You know, when you talk about, I think Marino's a really good example. That was a pretty good team he got drafted to because he fell in the draft. Now this guy falls in the draft and the team at the 20th moves up and gets him. Is that different than a guy just kind of plopping in?
Yeah, you know, you're kind of drafting a guy according to his college reputation, what he's been able to accomplish at that level, and how it's going to transcend to the next level. When you talk about Dan Marino coming out of college, you know, when these tablets came into existence and you could take it home and every single day you have all the information you possibly need by your side 24 hours a day, if you felt that you were a student of the game and you were a little bit farther behind, then you have to take your personal time and invest it in the tablet and start getting up the speed of what you needed. Back in the early Harbaugh days or the early Marino days, you carried around a 400-page playbook. And if you wanted to go to Mitch Friedman's room and get a roll of tape of a VCR or a DVD or whatever the technology advanced to, then you had to go and get it. You had to take it home. You had to put it in. Then you had to sit there and study it. Nowadays, it's so much easier to invest your personal time if you feel you're a little bit behind the curve. But if you don't do it, then that's telling me something about you.
Right.
I know you're
right.
Not committed. But then the teams can go in. And they can go, okay, I'm going to look up Mike Mulligan. How much time is Mike Mulligan spending on his tablet? Oh, man, this guy's invested a lot of time, and now I know he's studying. So, you know, you're starting to be caught up to speed. Now you have all these deficiencies on the field. How much time are you studying, Ashley? No, he's never checked into his iPad, his tablet outside the facility. Okay. Now we know that you're not really invested, and we're going to give you the most high-profile job in Chicago sports, and you're not investing any time in your team, then you kind of know that either you have to have a talk with that player, you have to get him in front of you to invest more time, or
it's
time to move on.
Yeah. All right, we've got the pick six next. He's Tom Thayer. You're listening to Mully and Haw on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Tony La Russa said Saturday that getting an 8-0 lead before taking the mound made pitching more difficult. Do you agree? Were you amused by Lance Lynn's motto?
Don't screw it up.
Would most pitchers enjoy that situation, or is that too many runs?
I thought it was fascinating. La Russa, just in passing, he said that that basically when you score 8 runs in the first inning and you come to the mound, you know that you can't throw anything down the middle, and that you're really picking spots. You don't want to walk anybody. So it's fascinating. You don't want to give them base runners, but you don't want to throw them anything that they can hit because you got this big lead. So it changes the mentality of kind of attacking people as a pitcher. And I had never thought of that, to be honest with you. I thought the more runs, the better. But you probably would prefer like 3 just so you can work your way into the game before you are walking on the mound and you got an 8-run lead and the game's over and everyone knows who's going to be the position player who pitches for them. You got to make sure that you don't screw it up. It does change the mentality of going out in attack mode, and instead you're kind of going out in protect mode because the lead is so big.
I don't think the pitcher's going to go out there and act like a 16-inch softball pitcher and start pitching him underhand. I don't think you're also going to invoke complacency in the pitcher's mind. He's going to go out there and he's got an obligation to go out there and do what's expected of him, no matter what the score is. So I don't think La Russa has given the pitcher enough credit for being the professional that he is, that he knows that he has a role to go out there and fulfill for the rest of the guys on his team, and also to go out there and look the other pitchers on that staff in the eyes going, look, whatever the lead is, I'm still going to go out there and act like it's nothing. So I think it may be a little unfair to, you know, the pro responsibilities that these guys have every time they have the opportunity to take the mound. And I think that's what these guys, especially the starting rotation, you know, once every 5 or 6 days getting the opportunity to go out there, that's what they set their whole schedule up for.
A pick six to end the half!
Is it a good thing that Yasmani Grandal had walked 14 times in his last 5 games? Given his wretched batting average, is it okay that he takes walks, or is he walking too much? Can you explain your answer?
I can't explain my answer, but I'm okay with him taking walks. As long as you have base runners, you put people in scoring position and give the opportunity to get runs across, especially the way some of the other guys are hitting. So, why would you not want a guy to get on base? Would you say, oh, man, that was a really nice strikeout, but, you know, get him back? No, just get on base, try to get around the base paths and, you know, try to work on whatever is hindering your opportunity to get hits. But if you can judge the pitches that efficiently to take walks, take them, get on base.
You know, it's interesting because Ozzie was talking about it. So he went 0-for-3 with 13 walks in 4 games, which tied a record in the American League held by Babe Ruth. 13 walks in a 4-game span. And I think he was 0-for-4, 0-for-3 yesterday with 1 walk. So, you know, he's hitting like nothing. He's hitting like less than his weight. What's he hitting, like a .113 or something? It's crazy how bad he is at the plate, but he's walking like crazy. So on Saturday, he walks 4 times, and he doesn't score once. Now, we walked once yesterday, and he did score. But I think the problem, as Ozzie was talking about it, is if you're in the 7 hole and you're walking, you got the 8 and 9 hitter behind you,
right,
who are generally not people that drive in runs. So Ozzie was saying, is he going up looking to walk? Like, sometimes there is a pitch that you see that might be a ball, but it's like a perfect pitch for you, and you can send that thing somewhere. And he's a guy that's capable of putting up some numbers, of hitting a home run, and maybe he's looking to walk more than he should. That was kind of his point. The idea of walking in the 7 hole without guys behind you to pick you up isn't as valuable as you would think a guy with that bat would be in the lineup. So I just thought it was fascinating the way he broke that down. And I wonder, either they need to move him to a different spot in the lineup, or they need to tell him, you got to get into swing mode. You can't just walk up there looking to walk.
Yeah, I think if you're reluctant to swing, I think that's not healthy for the team. However, you know, if you feel that you're seeing the ball well and you know that you're going to get on base and try to provide some spark, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought a walk is as good as a hit. Isn't that the old adage? But apparently not.
Not in the 7th hole.
A pick six of 100 yards!
Can you believe the White Sox played and won a game over the weekend with an outfield that consisted of Andrew Vaughn, Leury Garcia, and Danny Mendick? If someone had rattled off that group to you before the season, would you have believed the Sox were atop the division?
No. That sounds like I would have thought like, oh, no, what the hell happened? And frankly, oh, no, what the hell happened applies here because there's no Aloy and there's no Louis Robert, and that's bad. But, you know, and I was saying this last week, Tom, when Luis Robert went down, I started getting phone calls from people and talking to my Sox fan friends who it was like the Aloy injury was happening at the same time, too. It was not just him that went down. It was the two of them that it drove that home in some weird way. And the Sox have had time to sort of recover a little bit. And Andrew Vaughn still looking for his first home run, but he's been better. And he can play that position, apparently, which I was stunned to find out. Danny Mendick in right field, man. I mean, that was so weird. And yet, there were a lot of, like, really kind of hanging fly balls, and he managed to catch them, and he did a pretty good job. He didn't have any problems in that game, which is great, because if you do have a problem, then you know the guy can't play there. So it's good for him and his career that he has that versatility and can play out in right field. And I don't know that it's ideal, but it's pretty ridiculous when you think about those three guys starting a game. I could see Leury having to play the outfield, but I don't think I would have imagined center field. I can't believe Danny Mendick. And frankly, if you told me before the season about Vaughn, I would have thought, now this is a huge disaster.
Yeah, you know, it's weird because, you know, when you're inserted into the lineup because of injuries, the expectation of all your teammates is you're going to go out there and you got to play well. You're not going to play like the guys that have been injured, but you got to go out there and you got to hold things together while we get the guys healed up or, you know, can get better people in position. It's like Rodon, you know, who expected him to go out there and have this type of beginning of the season, you know, because of all everything that's haunted him in the past. But all these guys, all they can do is go out there and do what's expected of them in the outfield, hopefully come to the plate and do what's asked of them and, you know, just, you know, get the White Sox through this period. It's not like you can go there and flush all these guys out of your roster and try to bring in a whole new group of guys. You know, La Russa and the whole staff there, they got to put guys out there that they believe that they're up to what they have to do out there and get the job done and just, you know, keep this roster together.
Pick six.
Chris Bryant is just one of five players to start at five different positions this season, by far the best overall talent to do so. Can you believe he started more in the outfield than third base? Is he no longer the starting third baseman for the Cubs? If he's traded at the deadline, what position will he play for his new team?
Anywhere they need him most. You know, and I think that's the unique thing about Chris Bryant is Chris Bryant can come in here and say, hey, David, my back's a little bit tight. Put me in the outfield today just to keep me in that upright stance. Or, man, I'm feeling fresh. The weather is finally warmer. I'm loose. Put me at third base if you need me there. So I think they're super fortunate that they have a guy that's playing this well at the plate and in the field wherever they need him most. You got to love his attitude. It's kind of contagious. The other guys are feeding off of it. You can see that relationship between he and Rizzo that is a real positive for the clubhouse. So, you know, everything that Chris Bryant has been able to accomplish is very admirable, I think, by any sports fan because he's not just a one position player. Hey, man, wherever you need me most, put me out there. I'll switch in the middle of an inning if we have an injury. And his attitude never changes. So I admire Bryant for what he's been able to do this year.
I think of Bryant as a third baseman. I think that's his best position, the one he wants to play. I think he's filling in the other spots to help his team. And that versatility makes him even more important. And maybe it's something you have to take advantage of now with Jake Mariznick.
Another wave of injuries seems to be hitting the Cubs with outfielder Jake Mariznick suffering a hamstring injury, Jason Hayward coming out with a sore hand, and Javier Baez having his back tighten up. What injury is most problematic for the team?
You know,
I think it is. It's probably Mariznick because that looked like the most serious injury. It looks like he's done for a while. He just collapsed in center field and limped off, and we've seen hamstring injuries on the south side, not a good thing. So I think that's it. But I would say it's got to be Baez in terms of getting the most out of a guy. I mean, he's your big run producer, and for him to have a bad back, it's very early in the season, guys. I mean, you know, we fear about people tightening up and having bad backs over the course of the year.
When you saw Mariznick go down and then all of a sudden he bent his right leg up and he felt the base of his hamstring, you kind of identified right there what was wrong with him. But to me, when I watched the last at-bat by Javi Baez yesterday, and it seemed like every single pitch he was walking out of the batter's box, stretching his back a little bit. Walking all the way back to the – I think Duffy was on deck, and that's – and he went and talked to him in between pitches and stuff. And what – Baez provides for this team, the incredible base running, the plays he makes on the infield, what he can do at the plate, and having a bad back before and knowing how long it takes to loosen up. I hated I hated the I don't know. I was just worried about that at bat after sitting in the dugout for that period of time. And I'm sure he was notified long enough where he had a chance to warm up. But even if it was a 15-minute or 10-minute notification that he was going to go to the plate, it's still not enough time when you have a back that's serious enough to sit out of the lineup for that day. So to me, watching that bat, that you know, at bat by yesterday, by as exciting as it could have been in the long run, I was worried about his back and how he was actually feeling.
That is a pick six.
The Bulls played inspired basketball over the weekend. Can they make the postseason, or are they going to run out of time?
Gosh, I don't know. What they had back-to-back wins for the first time this season, this past weekend and stuff. I don't know. I just, you know, watching these guys, it doesn't seem like since they made the big trade that they've gelled into a well-oiled machine. It seems like, you know, you get great games out of Zach LaVine and you get some of these other, you know, big highlighted plays, but you just don't get the consistency where they're going out there and taking a lead against a good team and finishing the game. It seems like they can get a decent lead before half or into the third quarter, and all of a sudden the opponent just methodically kind of catches up and takes over in the last 5 minutes of the game. As much as I want to see the Bulls played inspired playoff basketball, I just don't know if they're there yet.
They're 2.5 games behind the Pacers now. Washington's gone ahead of the Pacers. And they have 4 games left. So I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. But if they could win out, and they, you know, they're putting together a little mild streak here, if they could win out, they probably could tie them. Because I think the Pacers win tonight and then lose some games. We'll have to find out. It could be fun if it goes down to the end of the season. All right, we gotta get out of here. 312-644-6767. Your call's next. Mullion Hall on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
I'll tell you, we got outstanding heart, outstanding spirit. The other guys are yelling, happy flight. We'll have a happy flight. Enjoy the off day. But then it's about what's next. You know, we're still in May, but... I was like today, you know, they score in the first and they watched Lucas battle out of that thing and they come out there and just took a bunch of great at bats. And you look at the, it was a complete game. One of the most complete games we played, including third base coach, you know, Ronnie, when he sent Grandal, there was defense all over the field, a lot of good looking at bats, hungry at bats. So I think it's probably, you know, a good bullpen work too. I mean, Marshall, we got a big out and then he walked 2 guys, but you know, Hoyer came in. Bummer was great, and so was Ruiz. So I think it's probably, you know, one of the most complete games we've played.
Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's Tony La Russa. He, of course, is the manager of the Chicago White Sox. David is off today, and the great Tom Thayer is sitting in, and it is it's humiliating, Tom, to be in your presence. Yeah. I'm not worthy. But I think when I hear from Tony La Russa and he talks about the complete game that they played. You know, one of the fun things, I mean, to have a sweep of a team like that is excellent because they're already kind of down and this is a team that probably started a lot better, didn't play a great schedule, then they start losing and then you go in there. And you don't just go in there, you're coming off a terrible loss, the worst loss of the year, where the manager makes 3 really crazy decisions, one of which is related to not knowing the rules. And when we talked on Friday, my whole thing was, I just hope, like the question was, are we going to have this problem again, this Tony La Russa problem, which I think it will come into play. I think, but it would take 10 days to a couple weeks before it happens again, before we're looking at each other and like, what the hell's happening here? But I think that it was very important for them to sweep that series, not just to have first place in their hip pocket. They're 1 game ahead now in first place, ahead of the Indians, I believe. And they got the Twins this week. They got the day off. They got the Twins. And that's always a big series. And the Twins haven't had a great start to the season, and Buxton is down. You got to take advantage of that. And I love the way the Sox played in Kansas City, in part because it kept all that other stuff from being in play, right? You go out and you win games and you win them convincingly, and it doesn't come down to some strange managerial decision from the 1980s or 90s that doesn't apply to 2021. So they kept Tony out of the conversation, which was nice to see that you could actually watch a team and watch him win. And by the way, they beat another left-handed pitcher. You know, they're, what, 20-1 against left-handed pitching? And the only guy that had beat him, they beat him yesterday. So it's great to establish your kind of position and your prominence within the division, and you got to keep that going against the Twins.
You know, I think that speaks volumes about the clubhouse, about the guys like Tim Anderson and Abreu and all the pitching staff, that they have more control of the team than they're being influenced by the manager, even though I'm sure they have a great deal of respect for Tony La Russa. The guy, you know, he's a Hall of Famer. He's been around. He's seen, well, he hasn't seen everything in baseball because he didn't know some of the rules changes as of this year. But wow. Anyways, but, you know, just to my own analogy, is when I went to play in the USFL, I played for George Allen. And George Allen came back from a long hiatus to be a head coach. And now we were guys, I was a young guy, but I played with older guys from Doug Williams to Greg Landry and so on and so forth. And so we had to see, did the game pass by George Allen, or does he have the immediate understanding of what's going on to make the decisions that you have to make during the course of a football game on offense, defense, and special teams? And so sometimes there was advice that I was given by Greg Landry or Doug Williams and these guys, because they've been in the game ever since. They've never been out of it to that point. So sometimes there is kind of a wait and see situation when you have these unique scenarios of people being out of the game and then being inserted back in the game again. So I like when I look into the dugout and I see the groups of pitchers all hanging out together and kind of discussing different pitching philosophies that you can see them explain, or else the enthusiasm that Tim Anderson shows when a guy gets a big hit or is doing something great on the base paths or in the field and stuff. So I don't want to say this disrespectfully, but it probably is, but I like the fact that the players are holding this thing together, and if there is a bad decision that's made, they oversee it, they overlook it, and they just stay in the same tempo, the same aggressive approach they've had to baseball that they've been playing with and not affected by the manager.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not dissing Tony La Russa. I mean, I'm just saying that it's almost a relief that we don't have to pick that apart anymore.
Right, correct.
Because the problem, and I don't know that everybody understands it, but the way I see it, Tony La Russa is too proud a person to retire, to resign. He's not going to quit.
No.
And Jerry is never going to fire Tony La Russa, not after coaxing him out of retirement, not after all that has gone on between them. So I think that this is a reality that people just need to wrap their brain around. It's not a bad thing. It's just the way things are. It's just how it's going to be. Period. End of story.
God, it would be such a it would be such a gut punch to Jerry if, in case something that drastic would happen, then all of a sudden now he's questioning his own thought process in terms of the leadership on the baseball team and stuff. So this is just some of the hurdles that these guys are going to have to overcome. And, you know, is there an active player on that team that can really go and have a conversation with Tony La Russa? Or is Tony La Russa so far and above player just because of his time spent in baseball and his age that he's going to say, hey, I'll get this thing right. You know, don't panic here. And that seems to be the mode here. They haven't been in a panic situation. It's been more for the conversation outside of the stadium than probably inside the clubhouse amongst those guys.
It's Mully and Haw. We've got David Off and the great Tom Thayer sitting in, and we'll do that. We'll do a little conversing next. We'll talk to you if you want. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Odyssey is your new home for all the audio that matters to you. That's Odyssey, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download the Odyssey app today to listen to The Score and Odyssey Station.
Bet Rivers has a hometown discount every single day. Check it out on the app to get daily boosts for your favorite teams. and just go to BetRivers.com or download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play. If you're an Android user, you can start wagering right now. I have seen a lot of things over the years, and this is the best place I've been. This is the place you want to be. It's great to have skin in the game with BetRivers, your hometown sportsbook. Are you new to BetRivers? You can finish your registration at the sportsbook at Rivers Casino and catch tons of live sports action in a great setting. This is a cathedral to the glory of sports. And with BetRivers Rush Pay, more than 75% of withdrawal requests are approved instantly. Get your money fast. You earn $250 in match rewards on your first deposit. And with the iRush reward system, you'll earn rewards with every bet, and you can redeem your rewards points for free bets. Bet with a trusted team that puts you first. BetRivers is your hometown sportsbook. Download the BetRivers app at the App Store or on Google Play. Do it now. Not valid for any participant of the Illinois Gaming Board statewide voluntary self-exclusion program. Must be 21 years of age or over. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.